This is the PC Gamer Podcast for Wednesday, March 5th. This is episode 123. Hello, cats and kittens. Welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast for March 5th. Yes, March 5th. God, it's March already.
How'd that happen? Yeah, that's weird. Dang. I'm not ready for March, but here it is.
I am your hostess, Kristen Salvatore. I am joined by our podcast producer, Andy Bauman.
Hey. Meow.
By our senior editor, Logan Decker.
Still not ready for March.
Our senior associate editor, Dan Stapleton.
I'm already ready for April.
Last, most certainly not least, our senior executive intern, Norma Chan.
Does that mean it's spring?
No, I don't think spring actually starts until April.
Oh, I think it's late March. I think it's like March 20th.
Is it?
That's what I heard.
It's feeling pretty springy here in San Francisco, though.
I heard it anecdotally, so I'm just going to go on Wikipedia and enter that in. And
yeah, exactly. Well, then it must be true, right?
Yeah.
It is really springy here, and, you know, just as proof that, you know, the circle of life, it is spring, and yet yesterday we all said goodbye to one Gary Gygax, one of Dungeons & Dragons book creators, passed away at age 69. And, you know, you can tell that he was a real gaming icon because he played himself on an episode of Futurama. I can't nice. Imagine anything else that sort of...
He was the ON, the original nerd.
He was the ON, so just wanted to do a quick shout-out and say there were all sorts of ridiculous jokes yesterday about people, you know, rolling multi-sided dice to decide what they felt about.
Well, there was he failed his saving throw. Yeah. There was rolling in his grave on Penny Arcade. Yeah. Lots of good-natured jokes, you know, respectful, but, you know, sad.
The thing that I think is really interesting about it is, you know, we're all sort of keenly aware as we look in the mirror every morning that that our population, that, you know, people who've been playing games for a long time is an aging population, but, gosh, we're getting to the point where we're beginning to lose our luminaries. I know.
Oh.
Oh, jeez.
You know? I mean, how many of you play Dungeons & Dragons?
I did.
That's good.
I did a little bit, but...
Kristen, when you said that, I felt the icy claw of death run down my spine.
Oh, good. Oh. Well, you know what? Since in keeping with the dark news, although this is not actually as somber as it initially sounds, Ziff Davis Media, who are a publisher and employer of our brethren Games for Windows Magazine, we discovered today, has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Which is not quite, you know, it's not quite as bad as it sounds. It's Chapter 7 bankruptcy, where a property is being liquidated, and this is Chapter 11, which means they've restructured their debt. So I actually have spoken with a couple people today, some of whom work there now, some of whom used to work there, and the scuttlebutt is that they have plenty of operating income, so it's not like they're shutting their doors, and that in fact this could be a really good thing for them. So that's what I'm hearing. I don't know if anybody else has heard it.
Although, I mean, I should emphasize that effective this year, it is illegal to panhandle on the islands in San Francisco in traffic. So that's just something to keep in mind.
They're not close to shutting down, and we're nowhere near close to bankruptcy either. So it's not an industry. It's just
we have cash coming out of our ears.
It's true. I'm here rolling in it right now.
What about the recession?
What's that spell? Oh my God! Somebody's smoking.
I'm soaking in it.
A bunch of pennies.
The economy is in disarray, though.
The economy is in disarray, but it, you know, I think whenever something like this happens, we inevitably get this influx of like, "Oh my God, BC, you know, what does this mean for enthusiast magazines?" Blah blah blah. And the truth is, what's been going on at Ziff, and I, you know, I say this as somebody who used to work there, has been going on for quite some time and has so little to do with. You know, if you're just going to boil it down with, like, the enthusiast publications like EGM and Games for Windows, it's a gigantic company that does lots and lots of other things. So, you know, anybody who points to this as some sort of indicator of, like, oh, the, you know, I don't think anybody is pretending that that the print industry is like soaring right now, but it's certainly not dying. You know, it's just sort of stabilized. So this is not some sort of indicator of doom and gloom. And certainly we send our best to our pals over there.
I was trying to, in my head, calculate sort of like how much money you guys get per subscribers and like how much it takes to run a magazine and all that. Can you give us like a little bit of an insider perspective, or is there much you can say about
the inner workings of
magazine publication?
I'm happy to. In fact, this is sort of an interesting thing. You know, when we get emails from people who are distressed about, for example, the fact that there are lots of, you know, ads in the magazine, or that the magazine is smaller than it used to be, and that the ad to edit ratio is not what it once was. One of the things that I let them know is when you subscribe to PC Gamer, when this a subscription without disc is really inexpensive. It's something like $12 a year or something. When that happens, we're making less than 25 cents on every issue, because the cost of producing the magazine and the cost of what you're paying for the subscription, that's about the differential.
And postage messes it up too. So
legislation right now to increase postage.
Right. Yeah. So when we say like, hey, you know, like we'll happily take ads out of the magazine and give them to more edit pages if people are willing to pay, you know, higher subscription rates.
Although we should add that's not a call that the editors make. So
that is true.
And there are always a few people that say, yeah, I'll pay, you know, right, twice as much, but that doesn't speak for everybody, unfortunately.
Listen, so if you want to pay twice as much, please send an email to the publisher. I would love to have him hear that, but unfortunately there's nothing I or anybody else on this podcast can do about it. So
I can,
and I should
my
also
PayPal,
add,
well, my PayPal
or just start
account.
Paying. Yeah, just start paying twice as much. Yeah.
Right.
Logan,
I think I was at one point actually. Like I think I had two subscriptions on accident at one point. So
thank you, Andy.
I love you guys that much.
You're ruining our advertising metrics.
Come on, people. Mama needs a new pair of shoes. But I should add in all of that I'm certainly not complaining. We're thrilled for every subscriber that we get and everybody who, you know, who buys off the newsstand. Yeah, thank you. A big thank you to each and every one of you. So, the big thank you right now is Steam should be giving to all of the people who are playing Audio Surf. So,
which is everybody.
Which is apparently everybody, because it's currently the best-selling game on Steam.
Or rather, Steam should be thanking the guy who created Audio Surf.
I suppose so. So I know that Logan and Norm and Dan, you've all played it. Andy, have you played it as well?
I've seen it being played.
So, okay, I haven't had a chance to play it yet either, so I'm going to get Logan, Norm, and Dan, you each get to tell me one reason why you think it's the best-selling game on Steam. So we'll start with Norm.
Because you can import any song into the game.
Okay.
And it comes with the Orange Box soundtrack, including Stay Alive.
Do you want to do it? I'm sorry, we should have explained for like the five of us out here who aren't actually playing Audio Surf what the game's like.
Audio Surf, it's kind of like Guitar Hero. It's a rhythm game. But unlike Guitar Hero, you can incorporate any song into the game. And it procedurally generates a new race track, which you race your avatar through. And it's very good at synchronizing the song's beats with the icons on the screen.
Is it like nice arrows control. Controlled or WASD controlled? Like
you can, both. You can use either arrows, WASD key, or even the mouse.
Oh, all right. Okay. So that's yours. Logan, what's your number one reason you think it's...
I'll give you two. One, it's the rockin'est game. All right. And number two, you jump in. You are having buttloads of fun in 15 seconds once you start the game. You know, unlike...
Is that a metric buttload?
Buttload.
Yes, it is.
Fun.
A metric buttload. You know, within 15 seconds of starting up the game, you know, you were used to these games that you have to go through all the intro screens, loading screens, tutorial, blah, blah, blah. How do you work it? What are the controls? This, you are having fun in seconds, and it's fantastic.
Stapes?
Honestly, it's not really grabbing me, but I do appreciate
the dissenting voice.
Not every game is for everybody, and I appreciate the novel approach to it. I think it's a brilliant concept. It just doesn't really work for me. But I mean, it's like Peggle. You know, a lot of people love it. It doesn't really addict me. I don't know why.
I would just love to say that is classic Stapleton.
I agree, and I'm glad that was a Stapleton moment.
That was awesome.
So how much is it?
$10.
$10 is pretty darn good.
And there's another reason right there. I mean, $10. I got my money's worth the first night I played it.
So is this the next, next Peggle? Is that what this is?
I wouldn't say so.
No, I wouldn't go that far.
I mean, the appeal is that it takes, it's more like an interactive visualization for your music database.
Right.
So, you know, if you have an extensive music library, it really takes the songs that you've taken for granted and lets you experience them in a whole new direction.
So it's
I was rifling through all my tracks going, oh, which one would be good? You know, what did this sound like, you know, when I'm playing, blah, blah, blah.
It's a stoner game.
I mean, it's surprising for me because there's so many products available on Steam, I guess. One of the reasons that it's the best-selling game on Steam this past week is because it's one of the, you know, they did heavily market it on Steam. Like, once you turn Steam on, got the update, there was a big ad for Audio Surf. There was a ton of buzz online about it. You know, everyone's super keen on the next Peggle. They want to find out what the next hip, you know, portal
Stoner
type
game.
Exactly. and this seems to be it.
I played it on Advil, you know,
I should add actually that the demo is on our last disc, the one that's on, I think it's on the one that's on newsstands right now with the Red Alert issue.
Yeah,
I believe so. If you want to check it out before you play it, before you buy it, I should say, you can do that if you grab an issue of PC Gamer on newsstands now.
Woo!
Pretty much the polar opposite of a stoner game, but still doing really well. Sins of a Solar Empire.
I would say that's also a stoner game.
I would make the argument that's pretty stoner game.
I don't see that.
It's so slow. You can,
right.
Yeah, flashing shifts.
There's just like a lot to pay attention to.
Yeah, and any game that you have to think about, like, you know, lucidly to strategize. I don't think you could effectively play any strategy game really without your faculties, you know.
Sounds like a challenge, Dan.
It's like stoners don't sit around playing chess. That doesn't make any sense. You know, it's a strategy game. So you have to think about it. No, but
they're too busy sitting in the corner drawing dark self portraits.
Exactly.
or on the opposite end of the spectrum, watching Blazing Saddles.
There you go.
Like 100 times. Dark Not that I would know anything about that.
I want to see that.
Trying to sync up Blazing Saddles with Dark Side of the Moon. Is that?
So anyway, what's it? It's like number two on NPD, isn't it? This week?
Yeah, the past week, and I guess in the first 2 weeks, it's been on sale. It sold 100,000 copies, which put it second on the NPD list after Call of Duty and above Sims and WoW and everything else.
Duty.
So it's great to see a little game like that do so well.
What's cool is that unlike, you know, Hollywood, where, you know, the first week's return is like 80% of a game or of a movie's eventual total gross, you know, selling 100,000 copies of Sins in the first 2 weeks doesn't mean that's it. I mean, through word of mouth and patches and stuff and, you know, possibly expansions, it could sell a whole lot more.
And there is an expansion plan, we now know.
Yeah, the head of Stardock, Brad Wardell, mentioned in a forum post that they are planning to do an expansion. They haven't gotten it sorted out yet. They're still working on the 1.03 patch, which looks like it has a lot of very cool changes to the game. It's going to enhance the AI. It's going to revamp the trade system. It's going to be pretty cool. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, biggity uppity to Brad and Ironclad and the Stardock guys. From 100,000 to a million gazillion, March 19th, apparently, go to the EA website for info on Sims 3. I have no idea how they have time to work on Sims 3 when they're so busy putting out expansions to Sims 2 every 25 seconds.
Well, and it's such a big part of EA's, gaming strategy now that they've got the whole division of EA devoted strictly to the Sims. So they've got to have at least two or three teams each working on Sims 2 expansions, and then they've probably got another bigger team working on Sims 3.
What do you guys think will differentiate Sims 3 from Sims 2? Any guesses?
That's a tough one.
I mean, it can't just be content because that's their bread and butter.
That's
what they've been doing, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So it's got to add new actual functionality to the game.
I cannot imagine what that would be. I have to be honest.
Especially extremists. Maybe.
Well, the mandate for the whole Sims franchise, with SimCity societies and stuff, is, and even to spore to some extent is to try to be a little educational. I mean, you're having a lot of fun, but there's also this kind of a hidden agenda behind the game. Like, you know, with SimCity societies, there was a whole the global warming thing, and you got to create an environmentally conscious society. And Spore, the point of Spore is to help kids grasp, you know, sense of scale, I guess.
Right.
So maybe some of that, yeah, and maybe that will come to play.
But
for Sims
also, the Sims has been stuck in not stuck. I don't want to make it sound like it's limiting, but it's always been in the present time. They could go into the past, into the future.
That's true.
I don't really see that happening. I mean, I think the core gameplay is probably going to be the same, building families, mm-hmm. building relationships. What I don't think it's going to happen is I don't think it's going to be a second retry or a retry at Sims Online. I don't think it's going to be try to be like a...
Well, we all know how well that went.
Exactly.
I think if anything, it might go the sport route and do the incorporate all the stuff they've done online with that, where they have, you know, the massively single aspect.
Yeah, yeah.
I hadn't thought about
definitely
the
content
yeah.
creation part. I
that's
predict
a good idea.
Be a big part
in
of
fact,
it.
In fact, I would be shocked if they didn't do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
you know what? This isn't on the schedule, but I just want to clear something up about what something I said a few weeks ago that we had to go back and retract. But it turns out that I was right.
Right.
Let's hear it.
Do we have a rant theme, Andy, that we can play in the background during this one? Okay, go ahead. Cue.
Deep Bolt Time. Yeah, so when we first found out about Battlefield Heroes, I said I was pretty sure that they were going to do something in there with the microtransactions where you buy something that will give you an advantage over other players. And therefore, the guy with that spends the most money on it is going to have a better chance of killing other people and doing better in the game.
And then you were initially proven wrong because in interviews, EA said it would only be aesthetics, right? There would be no advantages that you could purchase.
Right. And Norm, what did we find out this week?
And we found out this week that one of the examples of a power-up that you could buy will be a power up.
It's a nuclear weapon.
It will effectively double your experience points that you gain for the same amount of playtime.
Right.
So the way they justified that was they said, it's for people who don't, who can't afford to spend 8 hours a day playing the game. Now they can just play four hours, but they can pay a small fee to have their points doubled.
Right, so in World of Warcraft, I don't have time to go through this 4-hour instance, so I'll just pay somebody else to do it for me, and same thing, right?
So whoever doubted Dan, please now consume a piece of spoiled fish.
Yeah.
As your punishment.
I'll sit and wait. Until I eat.
Yeah, I don't. I can see both sides of that. My instinct says that's just wrong.
Yeah,
well,
retraction.
How'd you get from Sims 3 to Battlefield?
Okay, you win, Dan. You win.
It was EA and blah blah blah.
Got it.
I just forgot to just forgot
crazy.
To bring that.
You know, there's actually. I mean, kind of speaking to this issue, there are a number of companies. I met with one at GDC who are, whose theory is, look, this really is happening. You know, speaking of World of Warcraft, like, there are people who want to play that game. They want to be able to keep up with their friends in the game. They don't have the time right now. You know, the way that they're able to essentially purchase their way forward is on the black market, and there are a number of companies that have said, you know what, let's just make this legitimate. Like, people are going to do it anyway. Why would you penalize people for not having the time to play the game?
I totally buy that argument. I reverse my position.
Are you deriving pleasure from having the high level character, or are you deriving pleasure from being able to play as a high level character?
Well, I think there's any number of reasons. Like, I think it's completely legitimate to say, hey, you know what, I want to be able to play WoW, let's say, with my kids, but I'm at work, and I don't mean me because I don't have any kids, but
and there's no sense in trying to distinguish between the two. I mean, you couldn't do that.
Here's just to clarify my position on it. I'm not like steadfast against anything like this. I just think that, I wouldn't really want to play that kind of game, and I think a lot of people like me don't want to play a game where other people are able to accomplish the same things that I've accomplished. I think it takes away from my sense of accomplishment for other people.
I don't disagree with you. I don't
be able to just buy that same accomplishment.
But I can't understand why, even in a game like Battlefield Heroes, where like my pals are playing all the time, I don't have a chance to be on there as often and earn as much, you know, earn the XP that they are, but I want to be able to keep playing with them. And I know that if I don't purchase my way up, I'm pretty much left out in the cold.
Well, it's called experience for a reason. You know, you are experienced.
But see, I think that's why this could be a great thing, because you know what, if you're not cool with that, you just go to another, you know, MMO. Whereas if you are, you know, then this is where you have an alternative.
What if they had server, like different servers? What if like you could only do that if you were willing to play on certain servers? There are other servers where you couldn't.
Sony does a similar thing with their MMOs.
Station Exchange.
Yeah, they have places where you can buy things and sell things for real money.
But is it divided up by server? Like only if you choose to do that, you can only play on certain servers?
That is my understanding. Yes, I have not actually done that. But
another option would be like if you do choose to upgrade that way, they can make your avatar hideously ugly. You know, and that's a way of identifying people. You know, kind of
like Joe
Scarlett better.
You know, like you've got boils all over your face. You know, and you can actually see some of the liquid stuff. You know, coming out.
They just need to change the name of experience points to something else.
Purchased points.
Yeah. Right.
Fun points.
Bitch points.
Fun points, right. I was too busy points. Well, in keeping with the dissension among our ranks, Gameset Watch today published an article. They're doing this very cool thing, actually, where they're reposting stuff about some GDC things that they think people might have missed, and they posted something today about this GDC lecture that was called Making Games That Matter, in which game designers rant. And there is disagreement among our ranks about whether or not this was useful ranting or just plain whining. Norm, I think you felt like they had some pretty interesting stuff to say in this.
Yeah, and you know, even the first, I didn't see the presentation myself, but the article did, I thought, a pretty good job of conveying what the designers said. One of the designers, I think it was a Ubisoft designer, Clint Hawking, made the case that you know, games, they don't lack creativity, but what game designers lack is the courage to challenge their own creativity and to risk themselves for the art. Is what he said. He said that, you know, games like Call of Duty, you know, what if a game of Call of Duty was actually about duty? Or what if, like, not
Medal
duty,
of Honor,
but
yeah.
Duty. What if Medal of Honor was about duty?
Yeah.
What if Medal of Honor was about, you know, achieving honor as opposed to just being a rail shooter? These are the kind of things that he doesn't think game developers are, they're worth. He doesn't think that they're willing to, you know, challenge themselves with, because that's not what sells. But then he notes, like, games like Portal that, you know, genuinely show, you know, emotions and with an inanimate object, show that gamers want to see these things. And convincing publishers to allow developers to do that is tough. And so that was the brand.
I didn't see Portal being used as an example in any of the presentations. You know, they're talking about game, you know, quote unquote games like The Marriage. I mean, did anyone here play The Marriage? It was awful. It was a
nightmare.
Well,
no. I mean, obviously that was an independent game.
Fun,
but he's saying
it,
that,
you know?
Things like that, and it's something that Peter Molyneux is doing with Fable 2,
right.
Is that he wants to expand on our conception of gaming by, you know, by having emotions, you know, love. In a game, simulating it, and even though it might not be great, it might not work. Just trying that and being different is good for the art.
I feel like they tried something like this in the film. You know, didn't they try like Smell-O-Vision? You know, is this really any different from, like, you know, movies are really only appealing to kind of, you know, this one sense? And what if we kind of create this larger, you know, multi-sensual experience? Like, I appreciate the fact that people are trying to figure out the different things that games can do. What I don't like about the fact that this was called ranting is that it seems to me that what they're upset about is when they try it and people don't like it. You know,
like, absolutely.
We're going to try this really neat thing, and you guys really suck if you don't think it's awesome. Yeah. Like, you're not helping to move gaming forward. And
you know, kind of, Medal of Honor,
maybe I don't want to play a game about honor. I definitely want to play a game about duty.
I remember a while back, you know, there were some older actresses in Hollywood who were saying there are no great roles for older actresses out there. I'm like, what are you talking about? There are hundreds of great roles out there. There are plays that are being developed. There are indie, you know, films.
Right.
All these films. There's all these outlets for great actresses who want great roles. What you're complaining about is that there are no Hollywood blockbuster, you know, films being produced with, you know, with roles for women who are over 40 and 50. So that to me was just whining. No, there's tons of games out there that are doing all kinds of wild and innovative things. But it seems to me what they're talking about is, why can't Call of Duty be what I want it to be? You know what? I loved Call of Duty 4, and I'm glad it was exactly what it was. I hope they bring in more in the next chapter. But, you know, I think that these people, they want to fold in their vanity into the games that already exist.
And you've got games like BioShock, for example, is a, you know, pretty radical departure from your standard shooter. It's got, you know, it's got RPG elements. It's got, you know, some great depth storytelling and just a fantastic sense of atmosphere. So, I mean, they gave
the player a lot of freedom, too.
Yes, and like they took some chances with like the Big Daddy AI and things like that. So there are a lot of chances being taken in games.
Yeah, so I agree with what these people are saying. I agree with their goals, and I know that their intentions are great. To me, though, it just comes off as whining, because I think all the stuff that they want to see happen in gaming is happening. I mean, all over the place, and that's why I love being in this industry.
I just don't understand how you measure, like, you know, back to the Medal of Honor thing, like, how do you measure whether or not somebody really, you know, is performing what they're performing in that game out of a sense of X, Y, or Z? You know, like, how do you know that people aren't having an emotional reaction to the stuff that you're making?
Yeah.
I want to cite the Witcher as a game that's, like, really doing a lot to push things forward and take chances and be really creative on the storytelling and making you make terribly hard decisions and think about them, and, you know, everything affects. And all the decisions are bad, basically. You don't have a good decision.
Wow, it's just like real life.
Yeah, it's one of the best parts of The Witcher, is every decision was horrible.
Yeah. I haven't played The Witcher yet, but I'm kind of discouraged from doing it now, because they've announced this, CD Projekt has announced like their you know, Witcher Plus version, which is going to have like a 1.4 gigabyte patch that every Witcher, you know, owner can already who's already bought it, and they can download it, but it's aimed at addressing like every criticism they've received. So I'm just thinking, well, you know, I finally got a copy of The Witcher. I was about to start playing it, and then they announced this, and I'm like, oh, maybe I should wait.
I thought they were just updating some of the English translations. They're not changing any of the content, are they?
Oh, they're changing a lot of stuff. Oh. It's a huge patch.
Are they pussyfying it?
I don't know exactly what they're doing, but I mean, I've just heard that it's aimed at addressing pretty much every criticism they received in reviews and from customers.
Let's get between now and next week. Let's get in touch with our pals there and get the lowdown on exactly what's going on, so we can let people know.
Yeah.
Next week's podcast. So, hey, I hate to do this in the middle of the podcast, but I have to go.
I'm taking over in a bloodless coup.
Yeah, so Logan's going to take things on for me from here on in, and I will see everybody next week.
Andy, cut her mic. Do it now.
Oh, bello job.
She's cut. Logan, you're on top now.
Oh, damn. What do I do? Shoot. Okay, so we heard a little bit from Activision this week. There's a little chat about creating a Call of Duty MMO. Yes, you heard that right. As well as an Asian expansion and making what they called making StarCraft the model for in-game advertising.
They didn't exactly announce a Call of Duty MMO. What they did was, what he said was, you know, he tried to justify this whole Activision Blizzard merger, and it was kind of like what we all feared, which was that they just combined the existing IPs they had and ideas. Yeah. Like, they'd take whatever Blizzard did well, which is obviously World of Warcraft. Oh, an MMO, Blizzard does well with that. Let's take whatever business model they have and incorporate our properties, you know, Guitar Hero, Call of Duty. So what he said was Call of Duty MMO is something that they're considering because they now have this, you know, strong MMO presence with Blizzard.
So Norm, would you say that this is our worst nightmares realized?
I would say definitely it is not a good direction. I mean, it's nothing surprising.
Should our listeners crack each other's heads open and feast on the goo inside?
Is it a horror beyond imagination?
well beyond imagination. Mm-hmm. They're exploiting their properties, which is exactly what their mission statement was. Whether that means we'll have good games that come out of it, could be. But I, for one, would like to see new ideas. And even though Call of Duty MMO could be fun, why not something different?
Now, just about the whole sequel thing. I personally kind of like sequels. I mean, as long as they're well done sequels, and things like Call of Duty 4, that's a well done sequel. StarCraft 2 looks to be a well done sequel.
But Call of Duty 5. I mean, sequels. I have nothing against sequels. I think sequels, when they're done by the original development team, when they incorporate fresh ideas, and when it's not just an expansion pack, branded as a sequel, I think that's fine. But Activision's track record with sequels, especially with the Call of Duty series. I mean, Call of Duty 3, they just went to their standby development studio, right? NeverSoft, which is every sequel for them. The Spider-Man franchise.
But that just came out on consoles, so we don't care about it.
It came out on PC. It came out on
Call
PC,
Duty
too.
3?
It did?
No. The Spider-Man game.
Oh, yeah. But we got the same Spider-Man game anyway. my point is, it doesn't even necessarily have to be by the original developer, as long as it's by a good developer. So as long as they're putting some effort into these things and not just crapping them out just to squeeze money out of the franchise, like EA at one point had been rightfully accused of doing. I'm not going to jump to the conclusion that this is going to be, a terrible thing for the industry or for these franchises, because until they show that they have no regard for quality, then I'm all for them putting out more quality games based on franchises that we like.
I don't think they have no regard for quality. I think that quality is not as much concern for them as getting the game out annually and getting it done fast.
Well, I think that they actually may be doing something really smart here, in that, remember, they were just throwing these ideas out. Like Norm said, they didn't announce anything. This may be their way of finding out. I wonder if there's any excitement out there for these ideas. They throw out it was at some technology conference that they announced these or talked about these things. They may just want to check the buzz, see how gamers respond to the idea of a Call of Duty MMO.
But I don't think they're gonna stop doing new IPs. I think they're gonna be doing both. But to have a golden IP like that and not use it is foolish. So I don't really see the outrage here. And as a quick aside, we mentioned that they were talking about using the StarCraft model for a vehicle for in-game advertising.
Yeah, I was gonna bring that up. What does that mean?
What he's referring to there is how StarCraft is designed to have short, 15 to 30 minute matches, and then use the interlude between matches to deliver advertising, which I've always wondered why they don't sell ad space on loading screens as opposed to putting it in game and making you breaking the immersion by seeing ads for Pepsi in 2142 or whatever. I think doing it in the loading screens is a much better format, just because in between gameplay is a much better format, just because it works for television, for example. I mean, that's how they do it. They do product placement now, which is really annoying. I disapprove of that, but putting ads at breaks in the gameplay, just like breaks in a show's story, that I think that's a much preferable solution to deliver advertising if they're going to do it.
Speaking of in-game advertising, I re-downloaded Rainbow Six Vegas, and so they updated some of the in-game ads, so they're not all Comcast ads on the boards. Now they have a bunch of new ones. It's weird. It threw me off. I was like, just strolling around, shooting some bad guys. I was, whoa, Harold and Kumar, our new movie thing right in front of my face.
Then that ad worked for you.
Yeah, you totally did. Now I'm going to have to go see that movie.
Well, it's better than the obnoxious Comcast and Axe body ads, body spray ads.
Still, they're just not every single billboard.
Right. A little bit of variety helps in advertising, surprisingly.
I wonder how they sold those ads. They're like, yeah, we'll put you in if people update. how did they sell that? Or they just probably didn't even tell them that part.
probably in a patch, or you know, I don't know how that game connects online. It, I mean, maybe if you play online like multiplayer, maybe it automatically downloads it.
Oh, well, yeah. There are entire agencies now that all they do is facilitate selling in-game ads, and Ubisoft's been really strong with that. I know, like in Rainbow Six Vegas, all the cars were Dodges, and you couldn't blow them up.
and it's like Twister.
One of my favorites was in Black Site Area 51. There was a scene where you're in a drive-in movie theater, and you walk in, and there are a bunch of cars in there. And there's a new Dodge Charger, and one of your squad mates goes, "Damn, that's a Dodge Charger. That thing's brand new." It was totally shameless.
Nice. Oh, awesome. Shame. Poor shame.
What they should do though is like actually make advertising like cutscenes where like you shoot a bad guy, and he blows out the window, and he falls 7 stories down onto the ground. But instead of hitting the ground, he hits a giant stained glass Sprite ad made of glass. You know, it goes. Crashes right through the ad.
I'm going to vote no.
No, come on. This is the Hans Gruber advertising model.
We had a hardware one last week, Logan, so let's play this week for you.
Hi, this is Chris from Bettendorf, Iowa. I've got a question kind of for Logan, kind of for all you guys. I'm really into the hardware, and I'm working on building a new system. I've got a question about the PCI Express 2.0 bus and whether it's really worth it for future upgradability. Looking at P35 motherboards, the NVIDIA 680i's, and the newest 780i's. So I'd love to hear your opinions on that. So I guess that's about it. Thank you. Enjoy the podcast, and bye-bye.
There were a couple things in there. First of all, if you're worried about whether or not you need to jump to 780i yet, probably not just yet. I wouldn't worry about that at all. Although the only problem may be if, you know, 680i boards start becoming scarce, but I don't see that happening anytime soon.
What are the benefits of the 780i? I've heard a lot
really,
about it.
Really, right now it's all about DDR3 memory and triple SLI. How many people, you know, are, you know...
Yeah, they didn't make any major changes to the Northbridge or Southbridge chips. The odd number motherboards from NVIDIA, you know, the 580, 780, and the Enforce 3, have all been incremental upgrades. You always want to wait for the even numbered releases. Not that the 780i boards aren't good. They're pretty good boards. And if you want trials to lie, that's the only way to get them.
Is DDR3 really expensive right now? Or is it even available?
Compared to DDR2, because DDR2 is ridiculously cheap right now.
Yeah.
Right.
Isn't DDR3 what's inside graphics cards?
Graphics cards use? Or GDDR3. I don't know what the difference is.
And in theory, it's a lot faster. How it works, you know, in these boards has not really been proven yet.
So I guess the other question was about PCIe 2.0. How long do you think it would be before somebody requires PCIe 2?
Probably not for... It depends on the graphic card you have. Probably not for another year and a half. It's going to be a long time. PCI Express 3 has already been floated out there, so, you know.
So, yeah, let's just put that out there, because he was asking, is it going to be essential for future upgradability? So.
Yeah, okay. So, as for PCI Express 2, yeah, I think that's something, you know, any motherboard you buy in the next, you know, year, you're going to want to make sure it has PCI Express 2. The biggest advantage to it is the bump up in bandwidth, which is from like 2.5 gigabits to 5 gigabits. And that's about 16 gigabytes of data in each direction. So that's going to be, that's going to do you just fine for the next year. And in all motherboards, anything you buy from the next year or so is going to have PCI Express 2.
And it is backward compatible with PCI Express 1 cards, right?
Completely. Yes.
Cool.
So there you have it.
All right. Random question generator.
Hey guys, this is Captain Spaulding calling from Seattle. I had a question about online etiquette, specifically in, say, first-person shooter games. Let's use Team Fortress 2, for example. Any sort of things that rub you the wrong way, things that you see happening, or voice chats or chat sort of things that just kind of get on your nerves, maybe just more generally, or maybe even specifically you guys being who you are, people asking questions, etc. Here's a little option to opportunity to vent a bit. I don't like off-topic voice chat, personally, but I'm happy to chat and say hey. Also, is there going to be some sort of a clinic, possibly, that was suggested a while back Dan might do for RTS games? I could still use some brushing up. My Sims game, as slow as it is, is still very poor. Is that ever going to happen? Take care, guys. Talk to you soon.
Do you want to go first, Dan, and I'll answer the etiquette part. Do you want to talk about the possibility of an RTS clinic?
That's a great idea.
I think it's a fantastic idea. I think it's
you'd
a matter
have
of
disciples,
bandwidth.
Dan.
It's a matter of having the actual time to do it.
Yeah, it's obviously very time consuming. I mean, one way to do it would be to, I mean, unlike TF2 where, or multiplayer games where you have like, you know, 24, 32, or even 64 people, you can't get a ton of people in an RTS at once and you know, play games with them. I mean, the most you could play with Sins is like 8 people. So if you're playing with two editors and six, you know, six people from the six fans, then you're not really reaching as many people. And typically it's the same a small group of people and over again.
The thing with that RTS clinic is that's something that Kristen said, hey, that would be a great idea, and you know, didn't ask me if I actually had time to do it, which, you know, I'm still working on getting time, but it is a very time consuming thing.
Maybe, but Dan does have for the learning addicts.
Yeah. Sorry, what?
A learning addicts class, maybe?
Right.
I mean, make no mistake, Dan has a wealth of RTS knowledge. I'm just waiting to be unearthed. But the dig site is closed for now.
In the time being, Dan, share some of your resources, if you have any, where you sort of maybe share strategies or kind of troll strategies, or I don't know.
Well, for Sins in particular, their official boards, I mean, they've got people on there that know a lot more about the game than I do, and have put a lot of time into figuring out, you know, what kills what best. Personally, I don't really enjoy that, you know, getting into it, that level of getting into it, just because it turns a game into a math problem. And you know, I like, you know, kind of more organically figuring it out, which is why I'm not really that like that good a player. But you know, I'm competitive among people that don't you know, have a spreadsheet.
I mean, the biggest barrier to entry for most people getting into an RTS is learning the build order and finding a comfortable build order that they're comfortable with. And that's something that forums can definitely help you out with. I mean, if you jump on the official forums or even our forums and just ask, you know, what do you do, for example, in Sins of a Solar Empire or Command & Conquer 3? What are the first four things you build? Are there key bindings that you use? And then start from there, then you develop your own style of play, and you can have a lot of fun that way.
Mm-hmm.
Going to Spalding. Hi, Spalding.
What up,
going
Spalding?
To your first...
Hey, Spalding.
Your first question about TF2 etiquette or shooter etiquette in general. I mean, it's pretty much what you would expect from every other social situation, right? I mean, the mask of anonymity on the internet obviously makes people feel, some people feel like they have the right or to be offensive or, you know, crass. But as long as you are cool online, I mean, we play with a ton of people, and there's a regular group of players on our TF2 server, and for the most part, they're great.
Yeah,
we may not talk back a lot, but we do appreciate that they're playing with us every Tuesday and Thursdays on our PC Gamer TF2 game night. What we really don't like are the people who PM us, private message us constantly, because we can't answer every single
message. We just want to play games. We don't want to chat.
That's why I always have to go anonymously when I'm online, because otherwise it's, dude, quick question about this setup. You know, but there will be 100 in 30 minutes. And
That being said, so we still have a great community. You know, yeah. Vagabond, Vitor, Havoc, Spalding, everyone else I'm neglecting. You know, we know you're out there.
The props.
We acknowledge you exist.
Nightman, Sneakman. You guys are awesome at that game.
We love to hear from you on the podcast.
Yeah. I've kind of
if you want to send questions, you know, feel free to send more questions in.
I've kind of made quick friends with all those guys just by being on the podcast, and I thought that was pretty cool. They, you know, they all added me to their friends list and chatted me up a little bit. I didn't mind.
They're the finest people in the world.
And I was like, wow.
I wouldn't go that far.
Friends. No, I'm just kidding.
Do you know a group of finer people, of more exemplary citizens?
Not for
I don't.
TF2 players.
How about
they
the
don't?
Super
they don't. Exist.
I would say present company.
The Justice League.
Nice. Well done.
Dan, what are you playing?
Well, I'm playing the Club for Review, which is basically a shooting gallery. I'm playing Sins of a Sword Empire when I have time, and that's eaten up pretty much my entire schedule.
All right, Logan?
I'm slogging through the last level of Rainbow Six Vegas, and for some reason I wanted to go see that movie Harold and Kumar. Have you heard about it? I can't wait. I don't know why. It's just got into my head somehow.
Andy?
I play a little co-op Rainbow Six Vegas, which it seems buggy to me. I don't know if it's that solid, but it was fun.
That's something that they're going to fix in the second one, which is coming out kind of soon.
Okay, cool, because I'm actually really excited about that. Also, I've been playing TF2 a lot. I've been getting back into that game. That game is so solid. I've been learning a lot about it, too, just how to be patient and not spam all your shots away. And all the people on the server are awesome. And I played with you guys last night, if you noticed.
Oh, really?
You guys
I did not notice.
I killed
but
you a couple times.
I think that's incorrect. Incorrect.
Yeah, I left out that I did play some TF2 last night with all y'all. I was playing as scout just to mix things up because I was looking at my stats of what class I'd played and I spent much more time as heavy than anything else. So I've been going back and playing the classes that I haven't played, and I've realized something. The reason I haven't played those classes very much is because I suck at them. So, but I'm giving them a chance.
I seriously have like 15 minutes as a scout.
Yeah.
So bad.
For people listening out there, our TF2 server is PCG, maxpc.nuclearfallout.net. You can just type that into the server IP address, and that's how you can add us. I've been playing a lot of TF2. I played a bunch of Frontlines, Fuel of War, new THQ, Battlefield-esque game. I just came out. And obviously Audio Surf. Also, I spent a bunch of time this weekend on going back to StarCraft and the business model for StarCraft and how popular it is, watching some Korean StarCraft matches, tournament matches. There's a really cool site. I want to pimp it. It's called GOM TV. The website is gsi.gomtv.com. gsi.gomtv.com. And what they have is it's this tournament that recently concluded in Korea of the best, I think, 16 StarCraft players in the world. But it's all shoutcast in English. They hired two professional English shoutcasters to fly over there and broadcast these matches, provide commentary live. And so the video is on demand. And if you have any interest in StarCraft and want to see professionals, like real professionals, play, you can watch the videos. And I found it really interesting.
I saw those guys playing live in Korea at the last Blizzard Worldwide Invitational when they announced StarCraft II. It was pretty incredible, even though I had no idea what the announcers were saying. Just the speed that they play at.
There's elite SCV rushing going on and like.
Oh, there's some. It's crazy. Everything matters. Apparently, every like iota of health, every single unit.
Who gets to hit first?
Exactly.
In Zergling fights, it's that they take like I saw a Zerg on Zerg match, and they just kept advancing and retreating because they wanted to get in the first hit because that makes all the difference.
Yeah, and there's one guy who's apparently he's super good with Mutalisk, which is the flying Zerg, and they call him the Mutalisk Whisperer because he has his finesse and mind control over them is uncanny, and it's ridiculous how good they are.
I would love to see his business card. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you once again for joining us today on our podcast. And don't forget that you can be a part of it by sending your questions in MP3 format to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. That's pcgamerpodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Or hey, just call us toll free at 877-404-1337, extension 724, and record your question there. Keep it brief, keep it clean. You can also be a part of the insanely fun PC Gamer family by subscribing to our magazine. Just head on over to www.pcgamer.com/subscribe. For the PC Gamer crew, this is Logan Decker saying thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
When you
create an exciting
hair?
Reason.
Yeah, what's that? Create an exciting reason? My like, hair is on fire. No. No,
stop,
our publisher,
stop,
our publisher has called me into a meeting. And when Dan Morris calls, I guess I listen.
Shoot. Okay.
Happy, right. Happy squirrel time.
I know. That was a poor segue. You guys help me to then choose the next topic.
Kristen sent you the list?
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
We're in good hands here.
I'm doing the best I can with the resources I have.
Check. All right.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember why. Hold on.
Oh,
hold on. Give me 2 seconds. Obviously, this. Let's cut this for space, obviously. I keep telling people, like, about moving to areas where it snows and nobody listens to me, ever.
Well, I'm a big proponent of snow, because I ski.
Snow's horrible. Snow kills people. That's like, oh yeah, I'm a big proponent of cyanide.
Well, yeah, but dude, it brings so much happiness to me at the same time.
Logan likes to ski on cyanide.
The thrill of
you sound terrible, Dan.
But Logan...
makes him appear bigger.
But Logan, my parents' house just got, like, totally destroyed by tons of snow. So, yeah.
Snow. Oh, see?
I thought you were going to say squirrels.
I was going to say you were going to say that, too.
But I saw teeth sparks all over the door, you know, and neighbors are crying with their head in their hands.
Yeah, there are lots of squirrels there, too. So.
Alfred Hitchcock's The Squirrels.
Okay, so should we get this thing started?
Squirrels, like, throw pine cones at you when you're walking on the road.
If I was a squirrel, I would do the same thing.